Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. It's already December. It was last time we talked to the podcast, but I feel like now it's more December. It's really here, like a first full week of December.
Yeah, that first December didn't count.
It didn't count. Did not count. Maybe the realization just didn't hit me yet. It was kind of like the time's flying by. I didn't catch it yet. But anyways, welcome everyone. We're all kind of dealing with, sorry for the slow start this morning. That'll be Michael's fault. Everyone feels like they're dealing with some kind of cold or flu or something else going on. So we're just kind of trying to get going here again. Everyone I hear right now is dealing with some kind of cold or something at this point.
We're here for you.
We tried to, happy Tuesday, gentlemen. We tried to avoid that this weekend because we were supposed to get together with friends. And they reached out and they're like, you know, it's like the obligatory parent thing. Like,
someone's got a bit of a fever.
Yeah. We kept him home today because he had a fever and a cough. And then the next morning he's like, oh, he just has a cough. And I'm like, we're not starting the season this early of like passing stuff around the house.
Yes.
I don't know if they were too thrilled with us, but hey, you know. Yeah. And that's why you throw it out there.
Honestly, parents just make you better at risk assessment.
That's a very fair statement.
Yeah, because as soon
you're jumping on the couch right now, how much of a risk is this? You know, I tell you to stop, or do I let you figure this out on your own, or does natural consequences take over?
Yeah, and with the sickness too, like when you hear someone say like, "Hey, they're feeling a little under weather," like, okay, is this worth the risk? You do like economics is learned as being a parent, the cost risk analysis.
Yes, the cost benefit on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, cost risk would be a pretty terrible assessment, but
yes. Well, if it was a cost risk, you would never have kids. They're so expensive.
That's the Puglia way, the Italian way of doing it. Cost and risk, no benefit.
Have kids,
no benefits.
Have kids, they said. It'll be fun, they said.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Oh man. They're good. They bring a lot of joy and it's the little moments where they do something that not excites you, but it's like a something you weren't expecting, right? Yeah. They do these little things, these very sweet tender moments, you're like, oh wow, I love you very much. So
worth it.
I constantly call my son, he's oil and water to me, because there's moments of like, oh, like just my son, and these moments he hugs me, and then he'll like all of a sudden be on a couch and break, like, I mean literally last night he broke my wife has this big nutcracker that like very near and dear to her, gone. Kind of just the head split off, and I was like,
"I'm going to apologize to my parents because I'm pretty sure there's been a couple of things that I've done. They're like, what are you doing? You just have sorely disappointed me. So, sorry, mom. Sorry, dad." Well, that being said, before we jump into our main topic today, we have a very exciting announcement that we'd like to kind of get out here. You'll probably be hearing a lot about this in the near future here. Have you guys ever attended Sequel Bits? You had a chance. I think this is over in London.
I haven't had the opportunity, but I know several people that I'm really close to that it's their favorite conference to go speak at.
This is a very large data SQL conference that occurs over in, I think it's in the London area.
In Wales
this year. It kind of moves around a little bit. So Sequel Bits will be hosted virtually and in person this year in the UK and in ICC Wales. It'll be from March 14th to 18th. And don't say we've never given you any guys anything, right? As you know, this is our early Christmas present to you guys, for those who are listening to the podcast now. So we have we're talking with Sequel Bits. We want to promote their event. It looks like a really fun event. We're actually able to give you a 5% discount. So if you use Power BI Tips 5, you can go get 5% off your registration to the event. So take advantage of our discount code. We'll make sure we put that inside the links in the description below as well, just in case you want to go catch that later on. But if you want a little bit of a discount and you're going to Sequel Bits, we'd highly recommend you use our promo code. Save you a little bit of money. You can go buy an extra coffee or two, or maybe however that may turn out. Any other kind of brief announcements? I feel like there's been a lot of developments in Power BI and just the desktop changing, things have been kind of just getting better here. Any announcements that you want to touch on for the Power BI service or Power BI things?
So I think there's a really interesting article by Chris Webb. I think something like this has been done before, but he's basically talking about like how much data can you actually load in Power BI? And it's like the philosopher's way, but actually trying to test it out. So I'll put the link in here too. Okay. But he goes into basically...
I think you're hitting the main topic yet. I don't think we're there yet. I was thinking about there is an Azure analysis service to premium. Oh. That's what I was kind of referring to.
I see. So the thing that...
I was trying to tee you up there, Tommy, and you kind of...
I wasn't sure.
That's all right.
Okay. I gotcha.
No worries. You know what? We're all a little under the weather. It's going to be a bit bumpy as we get going. So analysis services to premium is now a new, there's a tool out that helps you accelerate your move away from AAAS into Power BI Premium. And Power BI Premium has been touted as being the superset, not the subset, the superset of Azure Analysis Services. All the things that Azure Analysis Services does and more things.
In features.
Yes. In features, correct.
Right.
Not in price.
Because to Tommy's point, right?
Actually, it is a superset of price too.
After we talk about this as a new release, like the Chris Webb blog is kind of an intro. It's not the main topic, but it fits in nicely with that launch of whether or not you want to migrate from AAS into Power BI, right?
Yes, true. Yeah, so
I think, in my opinion, like it's highly likely the vast majority of people that were using AAS can go into premium. And I think get more bang for their buck just because how premium is laid out with each data set size being the blocker for having to bump up in licensing as opposed to, you know, everything in the workspace or everything that's in premium being combined together, just unshackled like the capabilities of that tool. But I think there are certain use cases, you know, you still need to do your due diligence. And maybe this is where it dovetails into, you know, the conversation today, but you certainly need to do your due diligence in ensuring that you don't have a data set size in AAS that's going to not work as well in premium. And that's where I think Chris Webb's blog is timely because, to your point, I think we've seen articles in the past of sizing of when to use certain things or what the capabilities of the tool are. But Chris does a great job of Chris Webb does a great job in his article of highlighting all the different areas, including PPU, right? All the storage modes, all the methods by which you could max out the sizes in premium in different licensing structures without bringing up licensing kind of. But you know, it's a timely article. So it's like, it makes a lot of sense that they would release that and he would come with like, hey, but you should also know this stuff.
I would also agree with that one. So sorry, I guess I misread the liner notes here. So Chris Webb's article is also kind of talking about the AAS analysis services and kind of what happens as you kind of migrate there. It's considerations as well.
I think he doesn't bring up that new capability of like the migration. Okay. He just brings up, Here's what Power BI, you know, and premium, like how much data can you load in this system? Gotcha. And breaks it down really well.
Dig it. Some very cool articles there. Any other thoughts on this? Have you guys done any migrations yet from AAS? So, I mean, one thing here that's noteworthy, we're talking about Azure Analysis Services, not regular SQL Server Analysis Services. Does this tool work on the same thing for SQL Server Analysis Services as well? Or is it this is only for Azure?
I think it's just for AAS.
Okay. Because I know there was some kind of disconnect, not disconnect. There's like the legacy way of loading data sets and there's the new way of loading data sets. And you're going to have, if you have old versions of SQL Server Analysis Services and you're using the legacy version of loading data tables, you're going to have to like manually update those as you migrate over to the new system.
The legacy is also on-prem too, so I don't think there would just be a little button click to do that.
That's true.
A bit more work, I think, involved in that.
Oh, Greg Baldini is going to fact check us now on all the things we say about Azure Analysis Services. Greg, keep us honest.
Let's move on.
Let's move on before we get ourselves really in trouble here.
No, I want Greg, more Greggy chat. So I think you asked, like, has anybody migrated, right? We actually almost went the other way. In premium gen one, yes. we were hitting the threshold of like, okay, how many capacities do I have to spool up? Like, I can't manage multiple models of the size that I have and just keep like throwing money out the door because AAS made more sense, you know, from a cost perspective. But since Gen 2, like they alleviated that, but you know, that was, we were starting to consider whether or not we had to go down that route just from a cost perspective.
Yeah.
So, I love the move that they made. And I think what it does is open the doors for, organizations to make an easy shift into premium from a cost perspective to get all of those additional features that are there. But to Greggy's point, there's still some things that, AAS is going to fit the niche, you know, super large model, and some capabilities still in that tool that aren't in premium and may not be added into it.
Yeah. One thing Johnny Winter notes here is in the chat here, he's talking about a lift and shift isn't always a smart move. And he has found that working with clients, moving from Azure Analysis Services to Power BI was an opportunity to kind of refactor the model, take a clean look. Mm-hmm. Do we really need everything in there? I think that's a really interesting point, especially when you're talking about moving platforms like that. You could get a good read on what you need to bring in because you've kind of developed it. Maybe your AAS model was your first run of it, and your second Power BI model would be the second run, a little bit better design.
And that's very similar with a lot of organizations where they're still very Excel-based, and you're trying to transition that to Power BI rather than just let's recreate everything from Excel. Well, what are we using and what can we consolidate? It's like Kurt Bueller's article about like the report requirements.
Oh, Kerbal's, yeah.
Kerbal's, yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of like when we do a transition to really think about all those different components, and it's not just the lift and shift, or we should never, honestly, I don't know if lift and shift ever is always the right move because it's always, you're dealing with something that was legacy.
I mean, it depends. Like what, The Excel to Power BI, I guess I wouldn't view as a lift and shift, right? Like that, there's a wealth of
a lot of people, there, yeah.
But I mean, agree with that. I suppose, right?
Right. Like,
there's dev to get it into a space that you're not. You know, you can go to source systems. You can automate things that aren't automated, etc. Like a lift and shift to me is going for having a model in AAS and moving it into a model in Power BI, right? Like that's a lift. You don't do anything else outside that. The only time I'd argue that it's probably a good idea is if depends on the complexity of the model, right? I've been in situations where if it's not the original owners of the model, right? Like you'd have to pick up all of the nuance of how the model works and like the intricacies for you to start ripping stuff out and then migrate, you actually open yourself up for bigger issues because you didn't migrate a key piece that you really needed. So I would agree, like I would lift and shift and then revise potentially, right? When it's in the new system, as opposed to adding complexity in the move itself, because after you migrate, like you're moving a ton of data around, right? Like it's like
potentially,
there's a potential for data costs in that migration.
Yeah.
That it's better to kind of, I think, move it over first and then do refactor in there if you want to.
One observation that I'll just kind of throw out here, again, this is a little bit less around Azure Analysis Services, but this has just more been companies that were building analysis services, so SQL Server Analysis Service, something on-prem. I find there's sometimes these use cases where, especially when you look at like premium per user versus what you have on-prem, a 100 GB model per model is pretty impressive. And you could have 10 of them kind of thing. In order for you to serve those models on a on-prem machine, you got to have the machine that's large enough with enough memory to be able to serve everything. And in premium per user, you can get to 100 GB per model, which is kind of impressive. So when you look at the scale of like what you need, for all the different models that you're going to be producing, I feel like the on-prem models turned into more of this monolithic massive model. And then when you go into PowerBI.com, because there's a little bit more flexibility in the size of the models that you can use, you can actually start breaking them apart a little bit more logically based on topical area. So then to Johnny's point earlier, there is an opportunity to kind of refactor from that on-prem to PowerBI.com analysis services environment. So anyways, some other thoughts around there. I've had some good success with migrating clients that have been on-prem into PowerBI.com, got a lot more capability. And the reason we did that, because their machine on-prem was unable to keep up with the volumes of data and would fail periodically just because of large data loads or something happened. A lot of that went away when we went to cloud and we got more performance and speed without even tuning the model, because the Azure Analysis Service Gen 2 had more capability. Mm-hmm. Anyways, just want to throw that out there. Cool. Well, I think this lends us very well into our main topics for today, between Chris Webb's blog, talking about the Azure Analysis Services move and the tool that goes along with that. So today's topic is going to be kind of around too many data tools. How do you know which one to use? Which ones are your essential data tools? And I guess we're going to talk more specifically around maybe Power BI. Maybe there might be some other tools that are a little bit more on the periphery that help you support the Power BI ecosystem. So yeah. Let's talk about data tools for things. Any other thoughts, Tommy, that I missed that you think you want to add there for kind of context for the topic for today?
Well, I think the crux of the argument is based on an article Microsoft released called their Microsoft Intelligent Data Platform. And I remember seeing this and it was on the Azure side. I'm like, this is a new one. Like, is this another tool out there? And as you go to the article and there's like basically a landing page for it as well. You look at the number of tools just Microsoft has.
Yes.
And there's basically, think about everything in the Azure space, like just outside of Power BI. It's like, man, like, how do you know what's the right thing to do? Because like, there's a lot of overlap. Think about just in Power BI too. And I think that's where the conversation went, where in Power BI, there's a Power BI data set, or you can use data flows, or there's a data mart. Or you can, or do you go outside that space? So not just for a single report, for a lot of our projects, I there's not necessarily always the right set of tools to use, where you're always going to say, well, we're going to take this, this, and this, and that's the only solution here. So with the number of tools, and you can even expand this to outside of Microsoft, think of Databricks too, which I don't think is owned by Microsoft, correct?
No, it's a third party, right, but it's in the ecosystem.
It's in the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. How do we know what to use, and like, how do we go about? I think for starting off, how do we go about that assessment when we're dealing with a new project, of choosing what systems and what platforms we're going to use?
That is a great question, and I'll also add to your question more question around when you do these intelligent data platform type projects. You do one today, you make a choice based on your needs for tooling. You know, a year and a half from now, something new comes out, like another part of the tool shows up, like, hey, I was using Azure Data Factory, but now I have this thing called Synapse. Okay, it still does pipelines like I did before, but now I get a SQL serverless that I could use with data lake things. Okay, what does that mean? So even if you build a project, and this is what I do when I work on many clients, right? There's a project being built, and then, you know, a year and a half later, there's new tooling, there's better tooling or different tools that are being added to this ecosystem that are changing. Well, what is the most cost-effective way? So I'll kind of like at a high level here, one thing I'll just say about these tools and tool choices, some major decision factors for me right now, when you're talking about data platform tooling, I don't like turning something on and having it to remain on all the time. As much as I can, I like to scale up and scale down and pause it when not in use. So if you think about what Microsoft's kind of touting with the data platform, data lakes, lake houses, Synapse, all the ecosystem that they're building today, I feel like they're really pushing towards this modern lake house type architecture, right? You pay for compute, storage is cheap, materialize a lot of your data down into storage in order to save costs. So I don't know. They didn't really answer your question directly. Maybe Seth, what do you think? And then maybe I can come back and formulate a better answer.
Well, we're talking about like all of the different types of applications out there that are tools that we can use to implement data. And whether or not this analogy works, I don't know, but it struck me this morning where a lot of these platforms, because Microsoft isn't the only game in town, right? Power BI isn't like is the newcomer, you know, to a space of visualization and whatnot. So it kind of got me thinking, I'm obviously a Microsoft guy because that's all of my technical knowledge is in that space, right? All of the tooling, all of the things, but there really are many other platforms out there. And it kind of struck me in terms of like car types, right? Like kind of like you've got your EconoBox or mainstream cars, right? Yep. Lots of different parts to choose from. Not a lot of problems. Like there's not any new things that are coming up that other users over the course of X amount of years buying these types of cars have. So they're very easy to implement. You have high performance, but they're costly to maintain. You have custom built, kind of do it yourself, but you incur a lot of time. And then you have like vintage and muscle cars where like there's a lot of like it's still the same old beautiful car it is, but it's a lot of like doing your own thing. As my friends who have a couple classic cars talk, they're like, that's hot rodding, bud, right? Like where you have to take out a piece of the car to fit the new engine in and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I think across the spectrum here, I mean, there's a lot of things to choose from. And the complexity, I guess, for me in choosing tool sets come from the standpoint that I know even within our ecosystem, the pace and how rapid things change and enhancements that are made, I try to choose the platform that allow like gives me a lot of value right now, but I know is ultimately going to like scale in new features, in new capabilities without like allowing me more options to enhance my solution. But ultimately, even within here, you have a use case that is going to fit your particular needs as a business. Because I think one of the biggest traps that people fall into, even reading this article and watching the video, is they have a specific use case where all of these things just work seamlessly. And what you have to understand is this is marketing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, a platform is not fit and feature, even within Microsoft, especially as we all know, without your own understanding of how it works within the ecosystem. And correct. I think we'll dive into like different ways in which we can implement these things. But like, if it's too good to be true, and it sounds like it's going to solve your problem right out of the gate, like caution to the wind, right? Like that's where you say,
Wait, caution.
Let me dive in. Dive into that further before I just go, you know, sell this to my org. And then you buy something, you go all in, and then you don't know whether, like, then you hit something and it's like, oh, well, that doesn't work like the video showed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's always nuance underneath the covers.
Exhibit A, automated insights. Well, that was a huge thing at the business summit. So I believe that was their number one feature at that conference that year. No, but I love the car analogy. Sounds like a great article to read one day. But I think too, like the other side of this too is also what you're comfortable with, like your own skill set, right? You only know what you know, right? And
true.
I will focus on one thing you said, Seth, about what's going to scale. And I think part of that too is what's available to you at the time. You may not have access to the whole plethora of tools. There may be, like I said, a smaller subset. Mm-hmm. A great example for me personally is like data flows. That was something that I invested the skill in and the knowledge in, and something that after testing, I saw that it was a very great solution. So I'll probably be more inclined to go there if someone doesn't have the back end available to them, right?
Well, and I like your analogy of data flows, Tommy, because my experience with data flow started out very bumpy at the beginning. And to your point, Seth, earlier, like data flows was announced. I was like, ooh, cool. It's like Power Query in the cloud. And then I started to use it and the future was so rough around the edges. Yeah. It was like, man, I can't buy into it. And for like, I don't know, 6 months to a year, I didn't want to touch the thing again because it was too slow, felt way too buggy. I couldn't get data process correctly. And I feel like now, just now, I'm looking back at data flows going, man, I wish data flows was in Power BI Desktop now. Right. So now there's some features like there's like the linear graphing of like, here's the table and the transformations that you're applying. Here's where you merge two tables together. Like, so I really like the experience they've provided now, but it took a lot of time and thinking on the Microsoft side to really sand off the rough edges, because going from a computer like my computer that has like I don't know, 18 cores on it. It's kind of ridiculous. So like it they make it really good on my machine, and then going to a service-based interface where it's like, oh man, this is just too slow. I can't get through the data quick enough. It doesn't look like what I want it to look like. I'm like, man, this is just not good. So I have to come into, like, to your point, Tommy, right? I had to come in with these features when they get announced, when they first get, you know, touted. I had to kind of watch what's going on there and figure out, okay, well, is this a brand new feature worth it? To your point, Seth, earlier, is it worth my time to invest in this? Or is this going to create more headaches later on because it's just feature incomplete initially?
Yeah. I think one of the, like, I'll paste it in the chat right now, but there was an article I was reading while, you know, kind of spooling up for this conversation that I think succinctly brought together, like, the key pieces for me that I use in deciding, like, what tools to use, right? Mm. And there's a graphic in there where essentially there's 7 bullets, right? And the first is, like, what is the platform? What's the platform you're on? What's available to you without, like, redoing all, like, everything? What's the project type? Because, you know, depending on the project, that's when you're typically challenged in, like, choosing which tech stack to solve that problem with. What is scalability requirements? Like Greggy B says, like, the vast majority of problems don't need cutting edge solutions, but some do, right? Like, do you need this? Like, all of a sudden you may be starting with 5 gig, but is this going to spool to 50, 100? Like, as the business progresses down this path, are you going to, like, need that scalability, or is this something that's just going to be like, hey man, this is, you know, product data for our systems, and we create 5 products a year, right? Like, your data is going to stay pretty incremental and small in that regard. What's the type of performance? Is this internal facing reporting? Is it external, right? Is it for customers? Do they have expectations? Are they paying for it? Like, all of those things, you know, come into play. What's the performance level like, right? Or it is the same performance level. Team expertise is another huge one. Like, if all of my folks need, like, understand and they're 100% Power BI, and somebody in the organization says, hey, I'm coming in and we're using Tableau now. Well,
what does that mean?
You have to train my people, which is a huge ramp, or you fire them all and, you know, bring in new work. And that's probably not advisable, right?
Like, probably not good. All your tribal knowledge is gone.
Yeah, a tech stack decision. And therein, like, comes a problem where, you know, it does happen, where you have some leaders that come in and be like, well, I know this, so this is what we're doing. And there's repercussions to that decision down the street, down the pipe. Maintenance is a huge one. Like, great, we implemented it. Now what, right? Like, how long does it take to maintain these systems? And that's where, like, cloud solutions are fantastic. I love them because you don't have a lot of the maintenance you need to do on your own hardware that you have. You have blips, but that you can blame on organizations that say, I'm going to have 100% uptime. You know, like, so that's a good one. And then the biggest one, I think, you know, for organizations, I think in general, when choosing tech stacks, is cost. What does it cost me now? And I think the biggest challenge for me,
That's what I was going to go
over
next.
The last, like, 2 to 3 years has been really getting a lot of experience in these environments, Azure for me, where you can understand cost. Like, what is it going to cost me now? And what is it going to cost me in the future as we ramp up? Because those are two completely different things. And the cost mechanisms themselves are radically different than you owning your own on-prem, you know, solutions and hardwares, because the limitations that you have with those decisions are lifted, but the ability to, let's just say, expand your cost exponentially is really easy to do in Azure, right? So those are kind of the key factors across the way that I think succinctly put into, like, place for me, good decision tools or ramp points to think through when we're deciding on tech stacks or deciding on all of these things that look really good on the surface, but have to be butted up against our use case as a business. And I think that's the biggest challenge here, is making sure that our use case fits what's being promoted, as opposed to just assuming that, see that word assuming makes you out of me, that is going to work for you, your use case.
And I really feel like Microsoft has got a lot of really good stories here around data, and they've been very central on data for a long time now. One of the things I think that I look for here, and particularly as Microsoft has competed against other data tools, right? I think about Databricks a lot. Databricks is a tool that I use to do data engineering things. It's, you know, one of the main workhorses that I use. The development experience in there is just really good, and it's very fast. And relatively speaking, that compared to the Spark in Synapse, it's actually, I feel like it's a bit cheaper and more efficient than running Spark Synapse at this point. So
you can run the most recent versions always in Databricks of Spark, right? So you get massive, like you'll see the benefits.
Performance improvements.
Performance improvement before Synapse, because Synapse, like what, they have their own structure of how they implement
the
latest version of Spark, right?
And Microsoft does this interesting thing where they take like open source things and they add like the Microsoft flair to it a little bit, as opposed to it being like totally open source. And again, granted, the people who are building Databricks are the individuals who are building Spark, right? So they're the same people, right? As soon as Spark comes up with something new, they're instantly consuming it inside Databricks. Makes sense. So Microsoft, I feel like, is playing a little bit of catch up here. But my big thing, to your point, Seth, I want to really emphasize here is, if this thing doesn't cost me less money, why am I doing it, right? If I'm going to transition from Databricks to Synapse with Spark, why am I doing that? It better be more cost efficient by 10, 20, 30% cheaper to run the same job. So make it faster, more efficient, less cost. And that's why I think you go from this on-prem server, right? Another observation that I've seen when you're doing serving data to Power BI is, okay, I've had a whole bunch of reports that were producing data and we want to migrate from on-prem to cloud. Well, one of the reasons why you do that is that you're looking to reduce costs, or you have another major capital investment you got to put on your on-prem infrastructure. I'm not going to spend another $6 million or $3 million, whatever, to reload all the servers and migrate all the data. Why not just move it to Azure, that the cost is now an operational expense and it scales with whatever I want to do?
So there's other considerations too. And I think a lot of the conversation right now is about that, the ETL side of
that's true,
what we do, but there's a whole other side that I think goes into what you guys, part of the Databricks side of things, but think about the Power Platform side too. And when you have to think about what the right systems and tools to use, another big part, obviously cost, but it's really going to be what people are going to be doing. Because like, if you were to implement Databricks or you're doing ETL project, that does not necessarily affect a lot of the consumers directly. It's an indirect effect, right? But a lot of the other things, like more front end, I mean, every choice you make is going to greatly affect the end users, because they're directly being, whether they're using that, it's what systems they're using, their process is getting incredibly affected. And I think the other side of the coin here too is not just the cost, but the other side is, what is the, it's almost reverse engineering, what is the actual outcome we're trying to get out of this? And I mean, honestly, I know I've said this before, but it's expanding my knowledge about business intelligence or decision making is building Power Apps and going through that project, because you have to think in a little different, or actually incredibly different, but that helps so much when I'm building up reports or projects for Power BI, because it's every decision that you make is affecting someone else's process.
Go ahead, Seth.
No, it's funny. Like you brought it to the front end, and I guess like Power Apps is a flow, right? Like you're building things that directly impact consumers. So you're talking about process development for them. I don't want to move off of back end yet though. Because I think Mike made a good point about cost, right? Cost is a main driver. But at the same time, where this one and the pitch in, you know, from the Microsoft article specifically was talking about like governance and purview, right? So there's a cost thing involved, but it also directly relates to like point 5 and 6 in this, you know, article chart, where it's the team expertise and maintenance. Like, how long does it take you to develop something, right? Lower cost of something typically equates to it taking a longer time for you to develop against versus higher cost, shorter time to get insights in those things. Like Purview is a great example of that. If you think about the lineage across all of the data within an ecosystem, if this is a tool that all of a sudden for your governance team allows them to instantly see how data is being used within the ecosystems and the different tooling, that's immensely valuable. Is it worth the cost? You know, I don't know, right? But at the same time, like that's one of those tools that's like, that's a high cost, but the visibility into something that you would otherwise have to document, then maintain the documentation, whereas that just plugs in because all of these ecosystems work together and the data lineage is being tracked and now shown to the end user, I think is one of those that like you could make a pitch and say, hey, this is a high cost, but this is extremely valuable for our organization to use. So I just wanted to make that point. Yeah. Moving on, I agree. Like your front end changes to the end consumer and as well as the outcome that has to be delivered. Regardless, like that's the business has expectations. How you deliver those, the business doesn't care, but they certainly have that expectation. Like there's an outcome that they want to achieve. And if you choose a certain tech stack, you've got to deliver on that. And that's where that's where I think some of these like, oh crap, like moments where you don't do due diligence and figuring out the platform and what you need to incorporate to deliver that expected outcome comes into play where they're like, oh, but I wanted to do this. And you're like, oh, well, can't. Yeah. So we had a massive gap in our understanding from day one.
And that's a huge point, Seth, about the business wants this. They don't necessarily care or should know everything that goes involved from the back end to do that. That's honestly part what I love about this job is you need this and you don't have to know anything about how it's actually going to be done in a sense, like most users. But that's our job. And you have to be very, very critical in what decisions you make there. But no, that's a great point.
So what research do you guys do? Like, how do you, like, these are decision points. We've talked about like your upfront due diligence of deciding on particular tools, but how do you guys just roll with the tool? Do you kick the tires? Like, what is your process for, you know, like final selection kind of stuff?
So I guess for some things that I usually, when I'm looking at new tools, I'm almost always kicking the tires. I'm spending a little bit of time trying to, I even, let's say for a better lack of a better term, I kind of make up like a proc, like a POC or some kind of like in, like and a mock project. That's what I was trying to get to. A mock project that's kind of like, hey, I'm going to think of a solution here. If I want to use this new tool, here's how I would want to use it. And then I'm going to load this data from here. I'm going to go get it from this. I'm going to do these transformations to it and kind of just try and work through a full solution on the tool and just kind of get a feel for where the gaps are occurring, because then I can understand, okay, this part feels weak to me here, or this wasn't working, or I clicked these, you know, series again with Microsoft's release of their new tools. It feels like a lot of times things are incomplete. So I look at them going, I wasn't expecting that here. Or the experience I had in Power BI Desktop for Power Query was more robust. I'm missing functions, or it doesn't operate the way I want, or I can't see the data quick enough, right? Getting through those initial hurdles lets me be able to have like a little pro-con list, basically. Yeah. And that's kind of how I would approach most of these projects, especially when new tools are first released. And another, again, maybe this is a side note or side point, but when I'm researching things, I'm also watching to see how much Microsoft is developing in that tool. So one thing Microsoft will tell you all the latest, greatest tools are the best tool you're ever going to need. You'll need to have it in your environment. But I think the proof is in the pudding. And if you actually look at where Microsoft is investing their time and their resources, you'll get a better picture for what they prioritize and what people are using. Because Microsoft has really driven, especially in Azure's, it's all about the monthly active users. How many people are using that thing? And if there's not a lot of users, they're not going to prioritize a lot of developers to go build more in that area. Plain and simple. So I feel like there's a very strong correlation between where do you see the tools being created and are you regularly seeing new features on top of those tools. One that surprised me very much so is the metrics inside PowerBI.com. I thought that was a flash in the pan. And it's continually getting every month a little bit more feature, a little bit more feature, a little bit more feature. And I'm thinking, I'm looking at it going, okay, I really poo-pooed that idea initially. And it was like, not for me, not find a lot of value. But I've stumbled across a client who's using KPIs and dashboards inside reports and thinking, this actually makes a lot of sense now with the roll-ups and aggregations and the fact that you can have multiple metrics across from many different reports and have that data automatically updated as the report or the data set underneath the hood updates. They're trending stuff. They're basically doing what metrics is doing, but in a Power BI report. So for me, I'm like, this is a really good use case for them. They would really, I think, like this feature. And I like to see that as I like to see them continually building new features on top of metrics because it gives me confidence that the team is behind it. They're going to keep giving me new good features and improving it.
So metrics is my indie band, so to speak, where it came out like, no one listens to that.
I was there at the beginning.
yeah. I saw the first.
I found Nirvana first.
Yeah, exactly. No, so I want to kind of subset one part that you said that's really important where you're going to a tool. And the problem though, with when you're going to a new tool and your experience is just that it's your experience. And if it's a new, let's say, interface or a new language, well, of course, there's going to be a lot of stumbling blocks first. So for me, like, obviously, like learning a new tool is one thing, but deciding on the right tools, it's a mix of my raindrop and my feed to see what people are talking about in terms of like what tools are out there talking with you guys. It's because I can't rely just on my own experience, right? I have to rely also on knowing what the tools do and what's best for a job. Where, for example, if someone came to me and they wanted a deep data integration, I wouldn't ask them to pay me for that. I would say, pay Mike, basically, because that's not necessarily my area, but I know what the solution may be. Yeah. So you pay both of us if you want, but yeah. But the idea being like, my experience, if I'm going to rely on what tools to use based on my experience of that tool, well, I'm limited now on providing the best solution.
Yeah. I think where I land is, especially if it's in an unfamiliar zone or you don't know all the components, talk to the experts, right? Mm-hmm. Even if it's a consult, right? Like, or potentially even pilot, right? And that's what I do love about Azure, right? Like, I don't need to go invest a ton in hardware, right? True. To try to test something out.
100%.
If we're switching platforms or trying out Databricks or trying a third-party service that's supported in Azure, right? Like, there's a small pilot you can do with a small subset of data to, figure out whether or not you're going to hit any roadblocks based on your company needs on a small scale. And then if things go swimmingly, you can scale. You may just not know the cost, right? But in terms of like one of the things I do know that I'm sure the other big companies do as well, but Microsoft has whole teams that are there to support organizations in walking through your use cases, understanding how their tech stack fits into it, like helping you implement an architecture of how this stuff would work, right? Like, so reach out to them. They're like all in the local Microsoft offices. Like that's where those folks who are experts in the technology help companies figure things out and figure out what the use cases are so that you can be successful using Microsoft tooling.
Yeah. And Microsoft, I think, realizes this too. They'll even give you, like, in certain organizations, you can get like a pre-funded amount. Microsoft will say, I'll pay for the consultants to come in and build you the proof of concept around this thing, whatever you're going to be building, knowing that, okay, that investment up front for the, 2-3 weeks, month of work that it's accomplished, that'll get you in the pocket for 3 years. Once you've moved your data to the cloud and it's in the environment, you've got 2 terabytes of data. You're not going to be like, oh, let's just move to AWS one day. You're not going to on a whim migrate away. I think the lifetime value of that customer turns into a longer paying revenue stream. So they're incentivized to get you to have value immediately from this stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point.
100%. I don't think you implement any of this without a pilot of some sort.
Yeah.
And any company that you has the potential to gain or garner a large swath of your business should pony up to help you do that.
Yes.
So there is no cost but time coming out of your pocket to do that. The absolute worst thing you can do is just listen to somebody that's shooting from the hip and just saying, this is what we're doing. this is what we're doing. Like to my earlier example, right? Like I know Tableau is better. That's what we're going to do. I don't care what the ramifications are. Just ram it down everybody's throat. Mm-hmm. It's like that's the most disruptive and the most prone to failure in an organization from all standpoints, not only the teams that have to support it or build it, but also your end consumers who you don't know what their needs are. Right. And ultimately, I think Tommy, you interjected this early on, but whatever the tech stack fit, right? Like whatever the project type, it's the outcome that matters. Right. And it's what the end user expects to have delivered to them and with a certain set of capabilities that you have to provide. So you better make sure that whatever tech stack you're producing is the right one, right? Like, and that goes back, it can be a pretty car, but if it has no engine, it's not going anywhere, right? The expectations, if you're showing me a muscle car, is that thing's got a huge engine underneath. And, you know, you're going to rip it down the road as opposed to, you know, the go-kart motor. It's right. Like, and that's, you know, that's ultimately where all of these projects have to be aligned to, is that end user and, you know, what we have to deliver to the organization, not necessarily it being the coolest thing, you know, or the latest and greatest thing that's out there. But there's a lot to choose from.
So my next initial question, kind of thing, as I think about these things, is knowing that you make the analogy of the car, where does the old car or the truck fit when they rip out the engine and they retrofit it with a Tesla motor and Tesla batteries? How does that fit?
Where does the horse fit into this?
Where's the horsepower here?
That's hot rodding, bud.
That probably doesn't fit the analogy very well, but you know, but I like your analogy set there of the car analogy, basically, right? Because there's so many options to switch things out, especially in like, you know, hot rodding, right? What kind of engine do you pick? Does it stay with the same brand as the car? Do you pick something else that's different? You have to kind of like really dig. And I think to your point though, and especially with these tools, research. Talking to experts, people who are like, so one thing that I feel like I've learned in consulting space, nothing's new under the sun. There's always someone else dabbling in working with, that's why I like listening to the Italians. They're very much in that space. And we had a great Q&A session with them when they were telling us, hey, analysis services is wonderful, but it's been around for like, people have been trying to do data analysis things for like 30 years. Guys, this is not new. And I'm like, that's a good point. Yeah, that is a really good point. And then they're talking about like, well, here's where, you know, we talked to calculation groups in that meeting. Well, here's some parts of the calculation groups that are great. Here's some parts where calculation groups are weak. It feels like a half-finished feature in these areas. I'm like, wow, it's very insightful to have an expert tell you their thoughts on what's going on. So I think, you know, in this space, another value opportunity that I have found was Slack is very interesting. It's not Teams, but there are some interesting Slack channels around data culture things. Like there's a SQL a Slack channel that I'm in. There's one around Databricks and data lakes. So participating in those types of open forum expert discussions, because there's people from those product teams assisting you and helping you in those Slack channels, it's great getting into those kind of open forum question areas where you can listen to other questions people are asking and seeing what the solution is or what the responses are. I think that's another great way of learning about the tool and the product a bit more without actually having to use the tool.
But again, it goes back, even the car analogy here goes back to what you're trying to do. And I think I'm a reverse engineer by heart. That's probably why I struggled in school, because I didn't know why we were doing the math problems or what the point was. But take the car analogy where I would be so like, yeah, like what's the end goal here? It's like, well, just for homework. I'm like, oh, that's dumb. So, but the car analogy is like, if you are going to choose a truck or a car or a hot rod, well, are you driving to Florida every year? Are you doing the car shows? How much are you driving your car? Mm-hmm. Like there's everything starts to me with the purpose, right? And I think we can, mm-hmm. we have the tendency to get stuck in the weeds of features. Like, whoa, you could, you know, I could shortcut this, or this also has this code, and that's well and great for us. But to your point, Mike, all that fails if we're not solving the end goal and what we're actually trying to do. Like, you may love the hot rod and all those features, but if you're driving 3 hours every day, that's not the best car for you, even though you may like all the features in it, because it's not solving your, you know, your purpose.
Yeah. I think the last point I'll rest on is in whatever tech stack I choose, like one of my biggest things that I do love about Microsoft products, right? Like, they're not all plug and play, right? Or I should say, they're very plug and play, but you have to figure some things out on your own as far as like what tooling you want to use. Mm-hmm. But if something breaks, or if something new gets added, I want to be the one that fixes it. I don't want to have to always pay somebody else for the high end part, fixing something or whatever. Right. So when you get into some of these like one size fits all third party solutions, great, they may solve this problem, but what if I want this new feature? Well, now we're going to charge you more money, because that's they're custom devving something, whereas I want the ability, if I'm going to implement solutions, to be able to bolt on the needs that I have as they evolve downstream, not be in a place where I have to pay somebody to constantly do something for me, because that defeats my team expertise and increases my maintenance, which overall hurts the bottom line, because I'm constantly having to rely on a third party to do something.
And this is where I think a lot of this stuff to me is very interesting to think about, is a lot of this comes down to buy or build analysis, right? Do I buy that solution off the shelf or do I build it? And I feel like right now where we are in the technology world, I feel like there's a lot of good open source things that are being supported very well with companies and software. And so Microsoft's now supporting Delta Lake in various forms across their ecosystem. Delta Lake is an open source thing. It's a standard. I kind of like that idea, because especially when we're talking about which cloud are you going to use? Well, today we're using Microsoft. For whatever reason, to your point, Seth, earlier, the winds may change in your organization, and we're going to move to Google, or there may be a source in AWS that you need to go use. How transferable is your knowledge from one cloud to the other clouds? And I think that is a real decision point for organizations as they look at this, because I think many organizations, your data isn't always generated inside Azure. There's likely, the larger the organization, there's likely other clouds that have been used in the past that are not Microsoft, or the data is being generated by, like, for example, at Google AdSense or Google Ads, right? A lot of their data just lives in Google. It's going to make sense. That's where it was generated. So you have to figure out how to integrate to those other systems, and what is the best cost economical solution. And sometimes these open source standards that companies are using can help with that a little bit as well. Ooh, that's another good note there from Greg Baldini. The more core, I guess I would say this is maybe like a scale. The more core the tooling is to your business, the more you better review and research that tech to build or buy, right?
Right.
If this is going to drive your main, if this is your main analytical platform, you better be really confident that it's going to meet the needs you want. If it's just a little, you know, niche thing on the side here that you're trying to build out, okay, maybe it's something minor, you can get away with it. But if it's core, you got to make sure it's worth it. You're investing your time.
Right. And the last part I'll say to that, you said this before, Mike, where very fundamental to this, this is an article too, like the knowledge and the skill of the people who are working on it.
Yeah, that's important.
That can greatly affect the overcome solution, because then, in a sense, the technology you choose doesn't matter, because mm-hmm. if you have a limited skill there, well, it's not going to be a good solution.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge part with whether, if, let's say I was going to take on Databricks for Microsoft, probably wouldn't be the good solution, right? Mm-hmm. But having that understanding too, is it just me who has this knowledge, or is it other people at the organization?
Yeah.
Because it's,
or can I go hire scale. That talent?
Yeah, yeah. It can't just scale vertically. It has to scale in a sense horizontally too.
Yeah. So, some new language comes out called Baldini.m or, you know, right. whatever, something, you know, some yeah. kind of new
Power Baldini. Yeah. Yeah.
Convince me to use it.
Yeah, Power, exactly. Yeah. It comes out and it's amazing. It's super fast, right. but like no one knows it. So just, right. you know, do I go buy it right away? Like probably yeah. not. I probably stick with SQL for now. You know, there's probably some things out there. So
yeah,
thanks, really, Greg, for creating a brand new coding language. We appreciate your effort and time there.
I really hope there's a PowerShell module called Power Greg.
Power Greg. Listen, some very interesting thoughts there. I love that. That's super good. So anyways, really good thoughts today. I think we're just about any other final thoughts, Tommy, that you have that you want to kind of pull in here?
No, I think the biggest things is the reverse engineering. Start with the purpose.
Yeah, that's a good point. I really like that one. Don't get enamored by the shiny new technology, right?
Yeah.
Start with purpose and then work your way back from there. Love it. All right. Well, we've sat down with us, had a good long conversation around data tools. Actually, I'm surprised. We talked a lot about like data engineering, ELT. We didn't really talk much about DAX or Power BI in much. I mean, we talked about metrics a bit, but interesting. There's probably a number of ways more we could have taken this one. For data tooling, when I initially thought about this topic, I was thinking, well, is it Tabular Editor or is it Deck Studio? And then you guys opened my mind to like, no, it's actually maybe more than that, way more than that. So, very good conversation. For those of you who have been watching, we really appreciate your listenership. Thank you very much for participating. Our only ask to you, if you like this podcast, if you found some value from it, please share it with somebody else. Share it on social media. If you're going to the office or you're hanging out with other coworkers, mention the podcast. We really appreciate it if you spread the word. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
You find it on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor, anywhere a podcast is. Leave a rating on those platforms. If you want to join us live, YouTube and LinkedIn and Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you all very much, and we'll see you next time.